It's live, expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Glink is on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB.
Good afternoon, everybody, and happy beginning of the 4th of July holiday week. I'm Elise Glink. I'm sitting in for Mark Arum. It's actually today is Saturday. It's not Sunday. I had this confusing conversation with my father-in-law earlier today where he said, I'm sure it's July 1st. And I said, Dad, don't wish it away. It's still the last day of June. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Real estate is on my mind, as always, as we talk about this show. What is going on with mortgage interest rates, sort of the larger economic picture. In the things that I do each week, looking at my syndicated column and working on my Equifax Finance blog, CBS News, the content that I do now for Yahoo, all of these different things put me in a place to take a 50,000-foot view of the economy. And on our show every week on Sundays, I talk about how all of these different things in the economy are affecting the single biggest asset you have, and that's your house. Now, it could be an asset that's way underwater at this point in time, or it could be something that's going pretty well. These days, if you just break even or having a little bit of an improvement, you're doing pretty darn well in real estate. But there is a whole group of people who have been on the sidelines looking at the lowest mortgage interest rates in history and thinking, I got to get me some of that. I got to get in there and actually buy real estate. And my driving belief is that now is the very best time of your entire life. It will be decades if we ever get as good as this again, where affordability is at record lows, mortgage interest rates are at record lows, and your ability to go out and start building a real estate empire has never been better. So those are the things we're going to talk about on today's show. I want to start with the 50,000-foot view, because there was a lot of really interesting economic news this week. And given that we're heading into this big July 4th week where, I don't know about you, but everybody I talk to, yeah, they're taking off half day Tuesday and Wednesday. They're taking off Thursday and Friday too, and usually Monday and Tuesday. And so you're looking at kind of a week, it'll be a lost week productivity-wise, I think. And so a lot of the news that we usually get at the end of the month is even more pertinent, because stuff we're going to get at the beginning of next month, I don't think we're going to get so well. But let's start and talk about what happened on Thursday, where the unemployment number came out, right? Thursday was such a crucial day, right? We had the announcement of the health care bill from the Supreme Court. That was a huge surprise to most people. The big pundits had thought that that would get struck down. It got basically upheld. It has enormous, enormous implications for you and for me and for all the other people who are paying taxes in this country. But at the same time, as we're watching that, the unemployment number came out, which was very, very weak. We saw another 6,000 people. It ticked up. We're now at 386,000 first-time claims for unemployment. We're going really close to that 400,000 mark again. That's a number that everybody said, oh, we're not going to see that again. We're just going to see employment continue to get better and stronger. And yet, week after week, we're kind of seeing these numbers go up and up and up. And it's not good news. At the same time, we saw consumer sentiment numbers announced this week, and they're the lowest since December. So we had this surge in the spring, like we have the last couple of years, where people were starting to feel good about it, right? We're all starting to feel like maybe we're going to get through this thing, and this is going to be the year where we're inching forward, and suddenly it's like a deflation, like the big ball, and it's inflated, and suddenly somebody lets the gas on, and it's like, you know, and the air comes out. That's kind of how consumer sentiment has been. And so all that excitement that built up in the spring that we were really making tracks has kind of come back and fallen all the way down again. At the same time, and these two things kind of go hand in hand, right? If you don't feel good about where the economy is going, you tend to put the gas on spending. And so consumer spending was announced this week that it's the weakest it's been in 6 months. So you're not spending, you're not feeling good about where we are, people are losing their jobs, and then you've got all the European stuff going on. Honestly, Thursday, when the market was up and down and all over the place, you could just feel folks looking over at China, which has announced that it's hit a major slowdown. In fact, today's Barron is all about the China slowdown and how this is going to be a very hard landing. And then you've got what's going on in Europe, and Spain is in big trouble. My sister's over there now. Hopefully there won't be a general strike. There's a lot of uncertainty. So as we got a little more clarity about health care bill, we got a lot of more less clarity about what's going on with other parts of the economy. And this concerns me. I look at this stuff and I say, geez, how are we going to inch ahead? How are we going to get that big wheel to turn? And a lot of it comes back to real estate. So we saw this week that the number of new homes sold had gone up a little bit from the month before, always good. It's the highest it's been in about 6-7 months. This means nothing, however, because we're still less than half of where we should be in sort of a slow to normal market, and we're still about 75% down from where we were at the height of the market. And, you know, there was definitely a bubble there, but boy, we sure need people out there buying and building homes to get those people employed. That part of the economy has not recovered. I also saw in the New York Times this morning that, you know, heralding, oh, it's the beginning of the housing recovery. How many times have we heard that over the past 3 years? We're now at the bottom, and we're here for the housing recovery. And I thought, you know, what are they really basing that on? So you start digging deep. I'm looking at all the data, and I'm looking at what people are saying about it. And I realize there's a total mismatch between how some of these experts are viewing the jobs created and what they're really meaning in terms of actual jobs. So this month, the expectation is we're going to create 80,000 new jobs, net jobs, right? So it's the number of jobs created is bigger. But then you have all those people who have lost their jobs, right? So the net number is what's really important here. And a whole bunch of the real estate economists are quoting sort of gross job numbers. Like they're saying, well, so far this year we've created 1.8 million jobs. No, it doesn't quite work that way because we're not really creating that many jobs. And on the revisions, the total number of jobs created. And, you know, yeah, I get this. This is really just a guess of it, right? Nobody really knows. That number is coming down as well. And so when you look at what's going on, I kind of look at it and say, geez, where we are, where we need to be to have this economy grow and be strong and produce the jobs we need to affect our lives, my life, my family's life, your family's life. To get to where we need to be, we still have a long way to go. It's just not going to happen overnight. And the idea that we have fixed everything and all is well and we're moving forward, I don't buy it. And I know you don't buy it because I know you know a whole lot of people who don't have jobs, who are out of work, and who are kind of looking at this economy saying, I wish I were on the other side. I want to be the people who are ready to pick up property at $50,000 a piece, earning $700 a month on it. I want to be those people. I want to take advantage of this. I just want to get back to where I was in 2003. There is so much work that needs to be done here and so much fighting that's getting in the way, and it's driving me crazy. 404-872-0750 is our number here at the station. Filling in for Mark Arum today. We're doing a little real estate. Mortgage interest rates hit another record low this week for different parts, different kinds. Some just held at the 50-year low that they're at, or I guess it's now 52 years. But we're seeing this incredible low in mortgage interest rates. And all of it has to do with the Fed saying they're not raising interest rates. It has to do with the European economy and everybody very worried about that. It has to do with China. It's just like a perfect storm for low interest rates. So if you've got money in the bank, you're dying like I am, thinking, okay, now I'm getting about a quarter of a percent interest on my money, if that, if I'm really lucky in a good day. But on the other side, if you're looking to refinance, there are people out there, people like you, who are getting 3.5% interest on their money. on their mortgages. It's absolutely amazing. All right, 404-872-0750 if you want to join us on the show today. We would love to have you. Want to talk for a moment while we're screening some of those calls about a new study, another new study. I am full of studies this week. It's as if everybody just crammed it all in before the holiday week, getting it all out there for people like me to talk about over the weekend, I suppose. One of the things that came out this week was a look at how big a house you actually need to live in. So I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, you know, my house is pretty empty this summer. My kids are away. Alex, my older son, is in a summer school program. Michael is back at camp. And so Sam and I are rambling around this house. And it drives the inevitable discussion of how big a house do we need to live in once our kids are gone. You know, we're getting pretty close to that. We've got a couple years left, and our kids are going to be off in college. And so we're kind of talking about it. It's like, well, what room would you give up? Well, you know, the boys are going to want to have a room to come home to. Okay, maybe they can share, maybe they can't share. What about this, the guest bedroom? Well, it doesn't get used that much anymore. Now that Sam's mom is gone, she doesn't come, you know, that visiting mother-in-law thing happening. Where do you cut down? Well, dining room, we still need that for the holidays, for when people come over for dinner. We entertain a lot. Maybe we could give up the living room. We don't sit in it all that often. Trade that for a family room. That's been a going trend. And so we've been thinking about this idea of how big a house do we need and how are we going to change how we live so that we fit better in the house that we ultimately end up in. So Sam and I have been driving around starting to look at open houses of different sized homes. Homes that we could downsize into, potentially. Like, would a two-bedroom condo work out for us? So we went and looked at a whole bunch of two-bedroom condos. And I got to tell you, they seem really small. We looked at a three-bedroom house that had a first-floor master room. Did that seem right? Well, that seemed a little better, a little closer. We're thinking about our knees and how they don't feel so great anymore. And all those things that go into it. How big a house do you need? Have you made that transition? What has it done for you? 404-872-0750 if you'd like to chat about that today. 1-800-WSB-TALK. Don't forget to join me online. I've been tweeting already during the show. My Twitter is at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. We're going to be talking in a little bit about the National Association of Realtors stats on where renters are sacrificing to save for their first home, trying to get off the fence, take advantage of these low rates, low costs, all of it. Stay tuned. It's 20 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show. I'll be back with more News Talk WSB.
WSB with the most traffic reports every afternoon and the most traffic every morning. In your car, depend on News Talk WSB every day.
6 minutes past the hour, the Elise Glink Show, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. My website, don't forget to check that out and sign up for the free weekly newsletter, thinkglink.com. Doug joins us on the line from Covington. Hey, Doug.
How are you doing?
I'm good. What's going on today?
Okay. I got a second house that I had leased for a while, and now I'm trying to sell it. The tenants basically broke the lease. I got divorced and had to leave. I have it on the market, and I have an offer on it that's a lot less, about $80,000 less than the asking price. And my question is just how far short can I sell it and still, if I'm making payments on it, and still end up not giving it away?
Well, if you're selling for less than the house is worth, it's a short sale, and your lender's going to have to approve that.
Well,
so that's first.
I have very little.
Very little mortgage?
Well. Yes.
Okay, so what you really need to do is figure out what that house is worth. And the best way to do that, Doug, is to talk to some local realtors about what homes similar to yours are actually selling for. Sometimes with investment property, what you do is you price it based on kind of a multiple of what you're getting from the tenant. But in this case, if it's a single family home, what you really need to do is figure out what the other single family homes are selling for in the area. And then if it's as low as that offer that came in, you're going to have to make a really tough choice about whether you're ready to let that property go or whether you want to keep it where it is and wait for the market to improve. And that's a choice that only you can make. My feeling is you should let the property go, but you're going to have to live with that decision. 404-872-0750. We're talking real estate on the Elyse Glink Show. Stay tuned for more on News Talk WSB. 36 minutes past the hour on the Elyse Glink Show. Thanks for joining me today. I'm sitting in for Mark Arum. I'll be doing my regular show tomorrow morning, 11 o'clock, 11 to 1, here on News Talk WSB. Hope you can join us for that. Kicking off the 4th of July week. It's kind of nice. A little hot outside. Maybe we should talk a little bit about lowering your energy bill, which I think is going to be very, very high this month. We'll do that a little bit later on. 404-872-0750 is our number. Let's go back to the phones. Bill joins us on the line from Canton. Hi, Bill.
Hey.
Hey, what's going on?
I've got a 5.5% loan, and I've got just a little bit of equity in my house, and I can qualify for a 3.8% loan, but when they add the PMI back in, there's no need of making the difference as far as I'm concerned because the payments are about the same, and I was just wondering if there was any type of loan that I could get that I did not have to pay the PMI.
Private mortgage insurance has gotten so expensive because so many loans have gone bad in this great recession and the housing crisis that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are under. They're about $160 billion in the hole, and FHA is seeing loans go bad at a record rate. And so the only way that they could bring that back to some sort of, not even profitability, just break-even status, was to dramatically raise private mortgage insurance. So how much equity do you actually have in the property?
About 30,000.
30,000. What percentage is that? Because the percentage is key.
It appraised at 280, and I owe about 250.
Yeah. You know, you can you could go with an FHA loan, but then you're just going to pay their version of mortgage insurance, and you're going to pay it for the life of the loan.
Right.
So, unfortunately, there are no loans out there that don't have some form of private mortgage insurance attached to them.
Okay.
So I don't think I've got good news for you today, Bill.
Well, it didn't hurt to ask.
No, it's always a good thing to ask. You know, and I want to just reassure you that while we talk about 3.8% and 4% loans, 5.5% is a pretty awesome interest rate, historically speaking. And I say this on my own show all the time, but when I got my first loan back in 1989, 11.75%.
Yeah, been there and done that.
Yeah. I mean, 5.5% is a lot better. 3% would be better than that, but I don't think it's in the cards for you.
Okay. Thank you for your help.
Thank you very much, Bill. 39 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. We're talking real estate, money, and the debt surrounding real estate. Barb joins us on the line from Marietta. Hi, Barb.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? You staying cool?
Oh, yeah. Trying to stay inside today. It's too hot for me.
Oh, my gosh. Last week, we lost the air conditioning in my office, and one half of my office, the air conditioning at home, and then I got on an American Airlines plane, and one of the two air conditioning units had blown as well. It was bad air conditioning karma, and now it's even hotter this week.
I'm not coming to see you then.
No, we can do this. We can do business over the phone, for sure.
There you go.
What's going on?
I have a question. We bought, in the height of the market in Myrtle Beach, a condo, oceanfront, beautiful place, at the height of the market. It is now worth about a third of what we paid for it, according to today's standards.
Wow.
We've been trying to get the bank to refi us down percentage points so we can at least hold on to it. You know.
Are you having trouble making the payments?
Not yet.
What do you mean not yet? What do you expect to be happening soon?
If there's a bad rental season and we don't get any income from it, we could be in trouble.
Okay.
And I'm just looking ahead, trying to pay down on it as much as we can to get that get the equity higher. And I was just trying to talk our bank into lowering the rate, but they are they aren't willing. And HARP 2 isn't going to help us either.
Because you're too far underwater?
Well, not because we're underwater. They say it's not a Freddie Mac, Fannie Mae loan.
Okay, did you do 100% financing at the time?
No, we put $30,000 down.
Okay.
So it was more like 90%.
Okay. Hmm. So, what do you think?
Any ideas?
Well, the 50,000 rate, you know, the 50,000 foot view is at least you can still make the payments at this point.
Yes.
How many days do you have to rent it per month to break even, or at least to get you to a place where it's easier to make those payments?
Well, on a good rental season, we get about half in of what we have to pay every month.
Okay, and
so we're 50%. We're providing 50% whether it we have to provide 50% whether it rents or not. And if it doesn't rent, then we'd have to provide 100%.
Okay, so how was this past year?
It was decent. It wasn't as good as some other years, but it was okay. And I'm not complaining. It was wonderful. But we've gotten ourselves into a situation where I'm always the worrier, and I say, what's going to happen if we don't have a rental season, or we have a bad storm, or, you know, God forbid, we have something like Destin, you know, with the oil thing. Mm. So, you know,
I hear the worry in your voice.
Yes,
I do, and I'm imagining that you're up at night sort of thinking about this.
Yes.
And you're worrying about problems that you really can't control. Because even if you lower the interest rate 1%,
mm-hmm.
it's not going to make that big a difference. You think
sure.
it might. It's going to maybe help with $100 a month or $150 a month.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the real problem here. The problem is you're overextended with this house. And you might have to make a really tough decision. The tough decision is, do you cut the rate that you're asking for the rental, if you have control over that?
So we don't. It's on a program in the building.
So that's all you can do, is leave it where it is. Is there any other marketing that you can do to increase the rental rate, the rental occupancy?
No, they do it all with in-house, and we do have a little website that we put out, you know, say, forward it to the management company, if that be, you know, for that
okay.
reason.
Okay, so you've told everybody that you have this property to rent, and it's great, and you've done everything you possibly can to try and rent it.
Correct.
You may, and I don't know if this is something you've talked about yet, you may want to walk away from this property.
Mm-hmm. I have talked about it.
You have talked about it. And when you talk about it, what do you think about that? Because I know that you're probably a person who the last thing you would ever want to do is to walk away from a debt. But I'm telling you that if the property has really fallen 60-70% in value or more, 66% in value, it could be decades before it even comes back to even.
Right. Well, the thought was if we could get them to lower it to like it's a 6.25%, if they would lower it to 4%, that saves us almost $300 a month, and we would just continue to pay that towards equity so that we weren't so upside down in the future. You know,
right.
that's where we're at, but I don't know.
Right. Well,
I just wanted to get some advice from somebody who's been there and looked at things.
I have looked at things, and you know, really the question you have to ask yourself is, what's the 5 and 10 year plan for this property?
Yeah.
Because the decision that you make about today or tomorrow only delays the inevitable decision, and that is, what was the, when you bought this place at the height of the market, what was your original plan for the exit strategy?
Our original plan was that the prices were going to continue to go up and up, which I think in 2004 and 2005 we all thought it was going to.
The price was going to go up and up, and you were just going to
up and up,
get out and make some money.
Yeah, then turn it into a two. Well, we're going to turn it into an eventual two-bedroom. You know, you buy one, and then you get a two, and then move up. But that didn't happen.
Okay. So you have no exit strategy for this property?
No, we don't.
You need to get one.
Okay.
And you need to decide if it's 5 or 10 years out or 2 years out, and if you're going to walk away, and what that's going to mean to you financially. Because
right.
there are some real downsides to walking away, although it's better this year. Well, actually, it won't matter for you because this is an investment property. You
right.
walk away, And the property has a deficiency of how much? $200,000?
Deficiency would be, it's more like $180,000.
$180,000. Let's just call it, let's say $200,000 because it's Saturday afternoon and my brain on math isn't so good right now. So you get rid of this property, you give it back to the lender, and now the IRS comes knocking at your door next year, and they want about $60-something thousand dollars or $70,000 in tax from you because it looks like you've just earned $180,000 or $200,000. The deficiency is phantom income to you.
Right.
And so you've got an IRS problem on the other side.
Yeah, that's not only good either.
No, that's terrible. That's like a kick in the teeth after, and your credit's dead and all the rest. So that's
right.
One possible outcome here. The
second
possible outcome is that you do what you can to keep making these payments and marketing the property so that you can possibly get it rented at enough of the rent that you can, you know, provide. And you keep making these payments for the next 5 to 10 years, paying down the loan as fast as you can, and hoping that the market starts to rise a little bit so it meets you maybe halfway.
Okay.
So that's another exit strategy. 5 to 10 years out, you're doing what you do now. It's a big dent in your net worth, but at least you don't have to give up the home for foreclosure and face a $60,000-$80,000 penalty to the IRS.
Yeah, which would be a disaster.
that's number two. And the reason I'm pushing you to think about these outcomes is I think any decision you make now is really about this 5 to 10 year horizon decision.
Right.
It's about the exit strategy, and I want you to spend time thinking about it. Here's what I think you should do. I think you should explore all of the options and find the one that's the most palatable among all these bad options. Because I'm not trying to tell you any of these are good. I'm
right.
just trying to say where in your life does the least worst one fall?
Yeah.
And because you made a bad decision, you got unlucky, and now, you know, you're living with these terrible consequences. And the only bright light that I can see, Barb, is that you actually can make payments.
Yeah. We've been very blessed. No problem there. It's just that I'm the worrier of the marriage, and my husband does not worry about things. I do.
Well, but worrying is not... I think worrying for with no end in sight is silly, right?
You
to spend your whole life worrying about this. What I want you to do is look at solutions and then pick one. Because then you're going to stop worrying for no reason. You're going to start planning and taking active steps that get you where you need to go.
Right. But HARP 2 is not going to help us at all then.
I don't know that HARP 2 is going to help you. What might help you is going to your own lender and saying, okay, if we're not eligible for HARP, what is it that we're eligible for?
Right.
Because we don't want to turn this property back over to you. The last thing you need is another property that's worth 66% less than it was 5 years ago on your books. We'd like to keep it, but we need some help here.
Yeah.
And the banks are doing, many banks, I should say, not all of them. Many banks are taking a look at investment properties like this one, and they are pushing down interest rates. They do have different kinds of programs, and sometimes it's as stupid as you picking up a phone after you just hung up with them, calling back and getting somebody different who's smarter. It also might be as silly as you calling other lenders to try and see if there's anything else out there that you can do.
I've called many lenders, pretty much.
So then it's down to your lender. Who's your lender?
Citibank.
So Citibank is starting to get a little more realistic about this stuff.
Yeah, because they weren't about six. I started on this trend about 6 months ago trying to figure out what can we do here that's going to make this better. I mean, it was a bad decision, but, you know, the stakes were zeros, but I guess we all make them.
We do.
Some are just bigger than others.
We do, and this is a doozy, but it doesn't have to sink the rest of your life. So
right.
what I want you to do is go back to Citibank, try to find somebody who's smarter. At the other end of the phone, and see if they are interested in doing a revision of this loan, which is an investment property, and at least doing something with the interest rate. And they may now be more interested in doing that than they were 6 months ago, because a lot of things are starting to happen for them, and there's a lot more regulation. So let's start there.
Okay.
And then I want you to start thinking about exit strategies and what the different options are.
Okay.
And then I want you to call me back on my show 1 week and tell me what you've decided to do.
Very good. We'll do that. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Barb. Have a good, happy 4th of July. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Klink. We're talking real estate today. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more on News Talk WSB. minutes past the hour. I'm the Elyse Klink Show. Thanks for joining me today, sitting in for Mark Arum. I'll be filling in for Clark Howard next week as well on the 4th of July, because you know what he does every year on the 4th of July. He runs the Peachtree Road Race. So I will be delighted to be filling in. You can find me here at regular time. 404-872-0750 is our number. You know, as long as we just have a minute, I want to give you, and it's so hot out, right? I mean, this is just like, once you get into three digits, you start thinking about things like Death Valley, right? California, where 114 is kind of a cool day for them in the summer. So Sam and I took the boys there one summer so they could really experience dry heat, right? And Michael looked at me and he said, Mom, even the water feels hot, because they had a swimming pool and it was just ridiculous. When it's this hot out, you just don't want to push yourself. And meanwhile, your air conditioning is pushing itself like crazy. So what I want you to do is drink plenty of fluids, relax, pick up the magazine you haven't had time to look at in the past 6 months, pick up a book you've been wanting to read, get comfortable, sit indoors in the shade. Make sure you're not overexerting yourself, because it is way easy when it's 105 degrees and sticky humid out there to just get really dehydrated quickly, and that's just not the place you want to be. So stay cool, stay calm, and stay listening to us here on News Talk WSB. I'm Elyse Klink, and we'll be back with more in just a moment.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Elyse Klink Show. I'm live on Sundays, 11 to 1 on News Talk WSB, but today is Saturday, and I'm sitting in for my good friend Mark Arum, who's off enjoying the holiday week. I'll also fill in for Clark Howard on Wednesday, July 4th. So if you are getting ready to do burgers and dogs on the grill, planning for your holiday celebration, tune in, and we can talk about what we're all going to be doing as the fireworks explode later on in the evening. That is Wednesday, July 4th. 404-872-0750. I am online all the time. My Twitter account is at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. I encourage you to follow me there. If you've got questions and can't get through on the phone, you can always tweet me there. We tweet during the show. Phone numbers, you know, web addresses, all kinds of things that you can get, places where you can get information. As we discuss real estate and the money surrounding real estate. Always happy to help you with that. You can also get more information on my website. That's thinkglink.com. 7 minutes past the hour. What the heck? Let's make it 8 minutes past the hour. John joins us from Flowery Branch. Hi, John. Welcome to the Elyse Klink Show.
Afternoon.
Afternoon. How can I help you today?
There was a caller a couple of callers ago that mentioned PMI.
Sure, Bill.
And you had said something about the FHA version of PMI being for the life of the loan.
Yeah, well, yes, it is for the life of the loan, but not always for the life of the loan if you pay down enough. That's true. They changed it, I want to say, earlier this year. So it isn't for the life of the loan. That was incorrect.
The reason I ask, I'm at the time... beginning of last year, it made sense to, well, it seemed to make sense to use an FHA loan. And I was getting ready to go ahead and pay down to the 80% mark to, I thought, get rid of the PMI. And I guess that's not an option. Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, there are two situations in which private mortgage insurance can be canceled. So looking on the HUD website, it's when the equity position reaches 22% of the original value of the property. Or you can request cancellation when it reaches 20%. For FHA loans, I believe that is also the case.
So it's not necessarily then for the life if you have either increased in value, be a specific date and or can pay down.
I believe that's correct. The PMI, well, mortgage insurance for FHA loans used to be for the life of the loan. And in fact, the shift that was made, and I'm struggling right now to remember if it was early this year or late last year, that there was a new rule that went into effect that shifted dramatically increased the payment for FHA mortgage insurance. And I want to say it's now up to 1.5% as a one-time payment up front, and then it increased the ongoing mortgage insurance but made it cancelable once you reached the certain level of equity. I think that's what the new rule entailed, and I'm going to have to go back there and look specifically. So I'll do that as, you know, when we get to our next commercial break.
Okay, I was just afraid that I would never be able to get rid of it, and that was that was a little troubling. But knowing that there is an end that I can get to, that makes me feel better. So
the one thing I don't know, and that I'm going to have to look up as well, is whether older loans can now cancel PMI or not. So the older loans, and I don't know where that cutoff is, if it indeed is there, or they just said, no, now every FHA loan will be able to cancel PMI. I have to go back and look. Some of these rules are very arcane, and they will say for loans made after a certain date, then you can cancel. But for loans before that date, you cannot. So the answer is I have to go look it up for you, and I'll tweet the answer and the page. So if you follow me on Twitter, you'll be able to get that. We'll put it up on today's show notes as well at thinklink.com.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Thanks for calling the show. 11 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Robert joins us on the line from Conyers. Hi, Robert.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Ms. Link, for taking my call. I don't usually have the opportunity to call you because I've listened to you on Monday morning.
Oh, right. We rerun the show on Monday morning. You are up early. Are you commuting to work at that time?
Yes, ma'am. I commute to Aiken, South Carolina on Monday morning.
Oh, my gosh. That's quite the drive.
But anyway, I had a question, and I feel I may have run into an unscrupulous mortgage lender when I refied my house.
Okay. What happened?
It was a little over a month ago. It was my original lender, because I was from listening to you and Clark Howard. I was supposed to go get my original opportunity, my original lender, the opportunity to service through my loan, and he's my loan servicer. It was a FHA loan. I got a refi from 6 3/8 to 3 3/4.
Wow, that is a big drop.
And when I got to closing, I had an idea my closing costs would be, you know, fairly high, but they were over $5,000. And I was under the impression it was going to be around $2,200.
Did you ask about the discrepancy?
He said that was their normal closing cost. He said that's the reason I got my original loan from the same bank, and that was the approximate closing cost then. And I asked him about the HARP program. He said, well, this is what it is, blah, blah. And, of course, went through. You're supposed to trust this, you know, your lender. They're supposed to take care of me.
Well, wait a second. I'm just going to jump in and say, trust is an interesting word choice.
Yes,
I'm not sure that you should just sort of hand over control, you know, to your lender and never ask a question and never think that maybe you're not getting the very best deal. I would think more you want to be on the suspect sort of. Suspect would be a better word for it, maybe.
Right. But after doing this, I'm not able to use the phone during the week because of my work situation at Aiken. So, you know, here's my bank did my original loan, and we were gonna do the other refinance a year and a half or two ago, and I didn't qualify because I made too much money. Then the HARP program comes in, and so I could qualify for it. And talking to friends, they've got theirs redone, and their closing costs were negligible. $1,000 and
Shop this around? Because you didn't only have to go to your original lender. There are like 20 companies or 30 companies that you could have gone to that are participating in HARP. It may even be 40 companies, and they're all very competitive with costs and fees. And one of the things that I always tell people on the show, as you know, because you listen to the show, is that if a company is charging you higher rates than you expect or higher costs, what it's telling you is that they don't really want your business. So did you look at other companies and compare before you actually went through with the closing?
I was under the understanding that you were supposed to go back to your original lender.
No, in fact, on the makinghomeaffordable.gov site on the HARP program, it specifically says, compare rates and costs with additional mortgage lenders to ensure best refinance terms.
Okay. Well, so, I probably got taken for quite some money.
Here's what I would have done. If I got to a closing and the closing costs were twice as much as I'd been told, I wasn't told.
I had assumed that it was going to be that from hearing other people and listening to the radio.
Did you ever get an estimate of the closing costs from the lender?
No, ma'am.
So you made a couple of mistakes, Robert.
Right.
I think you could. What you could have done at that point is simply stopped it and said, hey, these closing costs are way out of line with the other lenders I've talked to. And then the lender could have said, oh, well, this is what we're charging, too bad. And you could have walked away because you have the right to walk away. There's a 3-day right of rescission, and you hadn't even closed yet. You can always walk away before you close.
Right.
Or you could, or the lender might have said, well, let me see what I can do in fine car dealer fashion, gone back to talk to his boss, and come back and made you a better offer.
Well, he is the boss.
If you had challenged him, he could have said, let me think about it for a minute and see if there's anything I can do. But he probably figured he got a sucker.
Well, I did what I thought I was supposed to do, but it did not reappraise my property, my house.
Right.
Anything. They just took what I owed on it and refinanced it. That had the
closing
cost on to it. Another thing the gentleman just brought up is I had to sign a paper saying my PMI was going to be in place till I had 50% equity.
50%?
Yes, ma'am.
Wow.
That was the FHA rules. It's a supposed to be an FHA loan. And I've had this loan bridge along with that bank for about a month before the real estate market fell out. So I've been underwater since I bought the house. And I've managed to keep it, did the right thing. And so,
well, Robert, I'm glad you called because it's a great lesson for everybody who's listening to always shop around and to try and get the best rates. You did get a very low interest rate, but as I tell everybody on the show, interest rate alone is not just the key thing, and I hope you're going to tell me that your savings is really big. What is your savings?
Right at $200 a month.
And how many years did you have left on the loan before you did the refinance?
26.
Okay, and now you went back to 30?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So my four rules for a great refinance. Number one, you lower the interest rate. That you've done. Number two, you lower the monthly payment. That you've done. Number three, you shorten the loan term, or at the very least, you don't lengthen the loan term. So that one, you added 4 years onto the loan term. And number four, you watch the costs of the refinance.
Right.
So, you got about half of it right, and it sounds like you're saving money, and that's probably the most important thing to you right now. And I would just caution other people who are in your situation to be very, very careful when you go to refinance, because it isn't just about lowering the payment. I mean, sometimes it is. If you're in desperate financial straits and you really can't make that payment, lowering it is going to be the life-saving thing, in which case my four rules are not as important. But if you want a slam dunk home run refinance, you've got to shop around, because even though all of these lenders are participating in exactly the same programs, they're still competing with each other. They still are going to offer more or less based on what their own portfolio structure looks like. Each of them has a different percentage of loans that is failing. And so they are out there to make their own best deal. I firmly believe that when you go to a lender, they're out for number one, and that's them and not you. And your mistake was thinking that you could trust what the lender was saying to you, and you could if you had already done your homework and checked with four or five other lenders to see what they were offering. And I think what you would have been able to do is take that next step, saying to lender A, your lender, hey, lender B and lender C are offering this exact deal, no 50% equity thing, and the closing costs are only $1,000. Can you meet that or beat that? Meet that or beat that. That's what you needed to say to them to really make it a slam dunk. But at least you're saving $200 a month, and that's no small change. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glenk. Stay tuned. We'll talk more about real estate next on News Talk WSB.
WSB, with the most traffic reports every afternoon and the most traffic every morning. In your car, depend on News Talk WSB every day.
26 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Klink. Thanks for listening this afternoon as we kick off a weekend of real estate and mortgage information. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. We are going to, let's see what time. Oh, I think we have time to take another quick call. Pat joins us on the line. Hey, Pat, how can I help today? Pat, you with us?
Yes.
Hey, how can I help you today?
Hi. Is this Elise?
This is Elise, and this is the Elise Klink Show.
Okay, I'm sorry. Forgive me. I was holding and kind of dozed off for a minute there.
All right.
Quick question regarding PMI. You've got a lot of people calling in about PMI.
I do.
I'll try to be as succinct as I can. Bought a house about a year ago. It was a foreclosure. We got a real good deal on it. There's been about six or seven houses in our subdivision that have sold since then, and they've all sold, let's just say, 210 plus. We bought ours for 170, let's say.
So you want to know, I'm just going to jump to the gun here because we have are going to come up to a commercial break. You want to know if the rise in value means you can go and get rid of your PMI. And I'm here to tell you that the answer is not yet. You're going to have to let it go 2 to 3 years before you go back and say that price appreciation has made it possible for you to eliminate PMI, unless you do a full-blown refinance of your loan, in which case they will pull new comps, do a whole full appraisal, and if you truly have that much equity in your house, you'll be able to refinance without PMI. But you'll need to do a full refinance, or you're not going to be able to dump PMI. So that's the thing. Do you want to go and start that process and pay another $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 to refinance your loan? PMI is so expensive, it may be worth it. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glenk. Be back with more on News Talk WSB.
Three new ways to save money and how to unlock gridlock. Monday with Clark Howard, 1 to 3 on News Talk WSB.
Six minutes past the hour on the Elise Klink Show, sitting in today for my friend Mark Arum. Thanks for joining me here on News Talk WSB, the number 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Just before we get back to the phones, I want to run down this list, new survey from Century 21, on what renters are willing to sacrifice in order to take advantage of the most amazing home buying market, I think, in history. But I don't want to go back more than, say, 80 years. But I'm willing to say at least over 50, 60, 70 years, what we are looking at now is absolutely unique in terms of low, low, low interest rates. Home prices have fallen all the way back to where they were in the Atlanta market to 1997 or 1998, maybe even longer. Affordability has never been higher. So if you've got credit and you've got cash, and you are willing to go out there and take a stand, there are amazing deals to be had. But if you're renting, you kind of feel like maybe you're not in the right place. You're still on the fence. You haven't made the move. Maybe you feel like it isn't there for you yet. And these renters are sacrificing. They're willing to sacrifice lifestyle choices to get the American dream. They want it. Their parents had it. Their friends are doing it. And they want to do it, too. And so even though we've had this incredible great recession, this incredible housing crisis, there is a whole generation of renters who still want to own a home. So what do they want to do? Half of renters say they're going to cut back on dining out. 49% say they're going to cut back on shopping for non-essential items like clothing and accessories. 47% they would give up luxuries like cable television packages and trips to the salon in order to purchase their home. And 10% would even reduce their contributions to a 401k in order to put more money aside for that crucial down payment. I would not advise that, by the way. I think that's a big mistake. Home prices, home affordability at its best level ever. The most affordable, homes are the most affordable that they have been since the National Association of Realtors started keeping track in the 1970s. And in the 1970s, home mortgage rates were nowhere near where they are today. So it is just good news for anybody who wants to buy a home. And we're going to talk more about that about a half an hour here on the show. 404-872-0750. Let's go back to the lines. Yash joins us on the line in Lawrenceville. Hi, Yash.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. What's on your mind today?
I'm listening to your show every day. I mean, whenever you are available, because Clark Howard is also on the show. But my question is about the mortgage.
Uh-huh.
Recently, I had closed my mortgage with my same mortgage lender, and I'm not satisfied with the rate I have received from them.
Well, didn't you know ahead of time what the rate was going to be?
I knew, but I was under the impression that I have to go with the same lender.
Why does everybody think they have to go with the same lender? I'm so surprised. You know, Clark and I have talked about this for years, this idea of shopping around for a mortgage.
Yeah, but what do you think? Should I go again and try the other better rate?
Well, here's the problem, Yash. If you refinanced under HARP, you don't get a second bite at that apple so quickly.
I think it's not HARP. I don't know whether it is HARP or what it's called.
Well, do you have equity in your property?
No.
So if you're underwater, you are only able to refinance under HARP.
Okay. What percentage should I bring my property so that I can refinance?
Say that one more time.
Okay. Should I bring my property to 100%, then I can get the refinance?
You'd have to do a little bit better than that. So for, let's say you're underwater by 25%, you would have to come to about 100, and you'd have to start building equity on the other side. So you'd have to get to 100%, right, where your mortgage is about equal with the value of the home. But then you'd have to go beyond that. Ideally, you're going to have 20% down, because then you avoid private mortgage insurance. We talked about that a lot in the show. But if you're only able to get to 10% or 5%, at least you may be able to refinance with FHA. But the savings may not be as good as you think it'll be, simply because you're then going to have private mortgage insurance. But what did you, tell me what the deal is you got with your lender. What's the interest rate that you're at?
I have 4.5% for 20 years.
That's not so bad. What did you pay in closing costs?
I had paid about $3,000.
Okay, and so you're unhappy with this because?
Because I look at the websites and they show like 30 years mortgage is around 3% or 3.25%.
3.8% for a 30-year fix. By the way, the 20-year is priced at the same level as the 30-year. If you wanted to get lower, you'd have to go to a 15-year or a 10-year. But,
I asked them to get 15 years, but they didn't let me. You know, they said, no, you cannot do that. No.
Right, because you're underwater, so that may not have been available to you.
But I have been paying my mortgage on time for the last 15 years.
But it's irrelevant.
You know, when I'm paying my mortgage, even then, I don't know why can't they do it.
Okay.
Because 15 years would be, you know, less interest rate, and that will save me a lot of money. I will be, you know, paid off my home within 15 years.
Okay, well, you could still pay more and pay off your loan in 15 more years, but the fact that you've paid on time all these years is irrelevant to the lender What's relevant is that your house must have fallen 50% in value.
Okay, good. So do you think my rate is good, 4.5 for 20 years?
I think 4.5% for 20 years is fine, Yash, but the question is, you know, if you had the cash to pay and bring the mortgage up to where the value is in the house.
Yeah, actually, unfortunately, I had $21,000 paid off to my second line of credit. I should have paid to my main home, otherwise.
But you had that home loan, you had to pay that off. So you paid that off, and now you've got...
But when I had paid the home regular mortgage to my lender, then it would be less than the actual, you know, right now it is 155. I would have been brought down to 125 by paying $21,000.
Okay.
130. And that will bring down less than 100% of the loan.
Okay, so are you going to work on that?
Yeah, I'm trying to.
When you pay that down, then you're going to be in much better shape to refinance. And I've got good news for you, because I don't think mortgage interest rates are going up anytime soon. The Fed has said they're going to keep it low through 2014.
Right.
That's two more years for you to get through with paying down that loan. And once that loan is paid down, and you're going to be, hopefully property prices will go up a little bit, but even if they don't, as long as you've then got equity in the property, you're going to have a lot more options. But for right now, 4.5% for 20 years is not the worst deal I've heard all day. Even today, not the worst deal I've heard. 404-872-0750. Denise joins us on the line from Roswell. Hi, Denise.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great. How are you? Are you staying cool?
I'm trying to. I mean, my car with the AC on, so it's working.
Okay, that's a good thing.
Now, the question I have, it relates to investment properties. I have five of them here in the Atlanta metro area, two in South Fulton, and three in Clayton County. I just got the appraisals on those properties, and all five of them are valued at about 50% of what I currently owe.
Wow.
I think the good thing for me is that all five of them are with mortgage companies that were currently involved with the Department of Justice settlement.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to find out two things. Number one, are investment properties covered by that settlement, and will I be able to renegotiate the principal and lower my payment? And if so, how can I get that done? Because when I called Wells Fargo and Citigroup several months ago, they all said, well, we don't have the rules yet. We can't do anything. So I don't know if the rules are out yet or how I should proceed. I wanted to find out if investment properties are covered, what I can do to take advantage of that.
All right. So let's start at the top. First of all, there are so many different settlements out there. There's the $26 billion settlement. There's another $1 billion settlement. We have had in recent days yet another $1.5 billion settlement. So there are lots of different settlements out there.
Okay, the one that I'm referring to is a $26 billion settlement.
Right. So the rules, I do not believe, have still been written completely on that. But regardless, some lenders are doing, some lenders are making deals on investment property and some lenders are not, okay? And even under the new settlement, I'm not sure how much writing down of the value lenders are going to do. So even if you do qualify for a lower interest rate under that, they may not choose to do a principal reduction because they may only do those for primary residences. And even then, they may not do it for that many of them. So the best thing that you can do, Denise, is to go back to the lender and say, are you ready to talk yet? And are you ready to write down the principal? They may say no, but we'll lower your interest rate a little bit. You have to decide, though, what you're willing to do. Because all of your properties are underwater. Are you covering the mortgage payments with your tenant income?
I am. Well, I am. Not by much, but we're getting by. But if we can make a little profit, that would be, of course, much better.
Right, but expecting to make profit on the back of the banks, when this was your decision to buy these, right?
Yes.
So now you want the lender to give you something when you made the decision to buy it, and you're actually breaking even or making a little bit of money. I'm not sure that's fair.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess that's your opinion.
It is my opinion, but I do think that there are people who are in primary residences who can't afford their payments who I would like to see get help too.
I agree.
And so you've got these properties, and then the question is really going to be, what's your exit strategy with this? Because if you want to make money, and the lenders are going to write down the principal, you're going to end up taking a hit on that one way or another. So with the property, you know, because these are investment properties, they're not covered. If you did a short sale, you know, the amount that's written down is actually going to be perceived as income to you.
Okay.
So it starts to get complicated, and you have to talk to your accountant, because if you are lucky in securing principal reduction on all of these, and then they redo the amount that you're paying, you have to figure out, when it comes time to sell those properties, how that's going to affect you, and it could affect you very dramatically.
So then tell me, if they do decide to lower the interest rate, it's just like going through a closing again. You have to pay closing costs, right?
Sometimes you do and sometimes you don't.
Okay.
So you may pay a little bit, $500 to $1,000, or they may just say, we're going to lower it, or they may do a whole refinance, in which case you're paying $2,000 or $3,000, but you're lowering the interest rate from, say, 6.5% to 5.5%.
Okay. All right.
If I were you, I wouldn't be expecting a huge gift here.
Okay.
I think you should fight for what you can get, but understand that the principal reduction could come back to haunt you.
Okay. Later when I sell.
Later when you sell. Or even as you're going through now, where it goes on your credit that you haven't paid as agreed.
I see.
So there's always going to be a price to pay here, and I'm not sure who is going to get it or not. But I have not heard of a lot of lenders doing principal reductions for investment property. It doesn't mean that some won't. It just means that I haven't heard a lot of that. And when they do it, what I'm hearing is because the owners can't get it rented, they can't get anywhere close to the amount of rent that's going to cover it. So that's the direction that I think it's heading in.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. I do appreciate your comments.
Thanks, Denise. 50 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. We're talking real estate today, 404-872-0750. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more News Talk WSB. 5 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. Thanks for joining me today. Don't forget to join me tomorrow, 11 to 1, also here on News Talk WSB. 404-872-0750. Bob joins us on the line from Macon. Hey, Bob. Bob, you with us? I am not hearing Bob. Let's figure out what that technical issue is. In the meantime, I want to say something about Denise's calls. Denise has five properties. She just got the appraisals, and the value of each of these properties is 50% of what she owes. She is underwater 50% of the loan, and she's looking around with all these settlements and saying, where's mine? You know, our investment properties covered. How do I get them to write down the property value, the balance, principal balance in the property? How do I get it to write down so that I actually don't have to pay it all back? And these kinds of calls make me really mad. You know, Denise is one of the lucky ones. She decided to buy these properties. She has five. She was going to be a real estate mogul. I think all that's great, right? You want to be the next Donald Trump? I'm happy to help you get there. But if you make a bad decision, I don't think it's fair to ask the rest of us to pay for that decision. You know, the $26 billion settlements comes from the bank, which eventually their money comes from us anyway. We're also seeing money come from the government. And I think it's really unfair when there are people out there who literally can't make these payments, and Denise is there saying, I just want some of that so I can make some profit. I don't think you should be depending on a handout for profit. You made the decision with the investment properties. If you can get a lender to write down the principal balance, more power to you. But the expectation that somebody is going to give you that kind of a gift, that I don't think is fair. And there are a lot of people out there who are in much, much worse shape. And what we really need to do, since you're getting enough income in as it is, to balance it out, is focus on the people who are about to go into foreclosure, so that they don't go into foreclosure and force property prices down even further. 57 minutes past the hour, I'm Elise Glink. We'll be back with more coming up next on News Talk WSB.
Cash, cold, that's what I need.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Minutes past the hour. News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. I'm sitting in for my friend Mark Arum today, and I'm so glad that you could join me to talk about real estate and what that means to you, how I can help you make smart decisions with the money surrounding real estate. I do this in all kinds of ways in the ThinkGlink community on my website, thinkglink.com. In the ThinkGlink community, where I'm publishing stories on CBS News' Money Watch, 12, 15 times a month, and now also over at Yahoo. And then at the Equifax Finance blog, where you will find great stories in the five pillars of personal finance, credit, insurance, tax, retirement, real estate, and then also our new category of family money. And you should go to the Equifax Finance blog, sign up for the RSS feed so that you get, you know, we give you a new story every single day that provides all kinds of great information for you about your money and your credit. Today, or I should say the other day, we had tips for filing a health insurance appeal. We have, in the wake of the new Supreme Court decision, we have all kinds of insurance content over the Equifax Finance blog, so you'd really probably want to tune in for that. Over in the tax section, this week, Eva Rosenberg is explaining how to help your teenager understand his pay stub. Like when he finally gets his first check, or her first check, and realizes that, oh, there's this thing called FICA. How do you explain that, and what do you want them to understand? So great information over at the Equifax Finance blog, and I suggest you sign up for it today. And then you can always follow me on Twitter. I'm at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K, tweeting during the show. If you've got questions during the week, we'll get back to you, at G-L-I-N-K. 404-872-0750. Mike joins us on the line from Canton. Hi, Mike.
How are you doing today?
I'm good. What's new with you?
Well, aside from my question, I just want to tell you I appreciate you taking a moment to a little input on that previous caller, because it astounds me at the lack of integrity that people seem to find acceptable these days in dealing with personal affairs and business. So I appreciate that comment. But what I was wanting to comment on, see if I'm a little just uneducated. I have a son out in Napa, California, that's looking to be first-time home buyer.
He would have to pick one of the most expensive areas in the country, of course, to be a first-time home buyer.
Right. And I've looked at some of the, you know, the market out there, of course, a lot different than here for people. It'd be a rude awakening.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
What I was wanting to check, he's fortunate enough, I think, that he has options of good credit. We can be a little flexible, or he can, and with some assistance as far as down payment. And I was just curious, is the very simple formula of, say, a 20% or better down payment and shop around for your interest rate as cheap as money is the about the best simple scenario or formula, or are there programs out there, you know, that he should take advantage of?
Let me jump in and say that, first of all, I hope he is taking advantage of all of the information out there on the home buying process. I've written a great book called 100 Questions Every First-Time Homebuyer Should Ask that remains kind of a Bible for this sort of stuff. It's like 600 pages, but, I mean, it really goes through in detail thinking about what you want to buy, how you're going to think about financing it, and all the rest. And so, you know, even if he doesn't want to buy that, which is like 10 bucks on Amazon, you know, my website has lots of information, and I want to make sure that he is also searching out for information, because it has gotten extremely complicated to qualify for these loans. Now, having 20% down and a FICO score above 765 gets you a long way down the path. So I assume he's got good credit?
Yes.
Okay. So 20% down is kind of this magic marker. It's always been a magic marker in terms of private mortgage insurance, but now, in terms of the level of scrutiny that lenders are putting towards buyers, particularly first-time buyers, where your son may come out of this with great stories like, you would not believe the level of detail I had to provide about a $25 deposit into my account. It has gotten that ridiculous. So having good credit, having a down payment helps enormously. Now, when home prices are at like $400,000-$700,000, a 20% down payment is pretty steep. So what is he exactly looking for out there?
He's got some people showing him around on, you know, the lower end, of course, of some short sale foreclosure, lower priced homes on the market, but wanting to still, you know, capture the location that Napa has to offer. They work, he and his fiance work right in the area there.
Great.
I'd ask about how far out, you know, radius they would look, knowing that in that area still, I think the location is paramount on potential value anyway.
There are some real opportunities. So as it happens, I've been looking around at houses for rent in Napa and in Napa Valley in a larger sense, simply because we're planning a trip out there in October. And I've been really interested to find such a variety of homes. I mean, really, really high-end stuff, because I like to dream like everybody else.
Right.
For rent at $2,000-$4,000 a night. And then also a four-bedroom, three-and-a-half-bath home that you can rent for as little as $350-$400 a night in really interesting, the same area. Mm-hmm. So there, that tells me that the prices of homes for sale are really all over the map as well, and there are probably some very good deals. And what's really different about that market compared to the Atlanta market is that out there, home prices have fallen, but at least there is a real market of buyers.
Right.
And they haven't fallen as much, nearly as much as we've seen here in Atlanta. So I think having good credit and a 20% down payment is going to take him and his fiance really far down the path of where they want to be. And if you can help him do that, and that's a great thing.
Okay. And that's about the simplest formula as far as any programs that, I mean, take advantage of the benefit of the inexpensive price of money these days.
You know, I'd rather he pay you down the line, or to repay that loan, if it is a loan or a gift,
uh-huh,
then, and get the, you know, 80% mortgage with a 3.84% loan, planning,
right,
to stay there for 10 years or more.
Right.
I'd rather he get that. He can look around for first-time homebuyer money, and the way you do that is you go to any search engine, type in the town that he's specifically interested in, and if it's Napa, it's Napa, and then first-time homebuyer down payment money, and see if anything comes up. The local housing authorities sometimes have these programs for first-time buyers where they will help people who don't have very much down payment money. But a lot of times it's income requirement-based.
Mm-hmm.
So if he's making a good living, he won't qualify. Sometimes it's location-based, so he might or might not make, you know, qualify. And sometimes just the simple fact that he does have the cash to put down 20% means he's going to get a better deal overall than trying to find money somewhere.
Right, right. One, I know you're tight. As far as the just input, while I was sitting here on hold, I was thinking, if he is not strictly, if they're not married at this point, putting it in his name, if they're looking to do something joint, pitfalls you would warn against as far as getting to that with lenders?
So California is really interesting. And when you live together for a certain period of time, a lot of things like real estate purchases are considered jointly owned.
Uh-huh.
So you say that they're fiancé. Are they getting married anytime soon?
It's been, you know, talked about in family circle only so far.
So I would just say to you that you want to protect whatever investment you're putting into this house.
Correct.
They need a partnership agreement if they're not going to be married when they buy this property.
Okay.
The single biggest mistake that non-married partners, gay, straight, or otherwise, right, the biggest,
right,
mistake they make is not dividing out who's putting what on the table, who's,
right,
bringing what to the party. And so if for some reason something happens, and it may not even be that they just split up, somebody may get a job offer in another place,
oh, yeah,
and, you know, who knows?
Right. All good till it's not good.
It's all good till it's not good. So you get them a lawyer, or find a lawyer out there who can create a partnership agreement where they actually talk about, well, I'm bringing $50,000 to the party, you're bringing $2,000 to the party.
Right.
If we sell this house and break up, this is going to happen. Or if you buy me out, this is the price. And if I buy you out, this is how we're going to adjust it.
Right. Okay. Hope you know. Well worth the wait. I appreciate your time, okay?
I'm so glad you thought so, Mike. Thanks for joining us, and have a happy 4th of July. 16 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Karen joins us on the line from Stone Mountain. Hi, Karen.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I am calling with need some help for my daughter. She and her husband bought a house about 6 years ago through FHA, and he lost his job about a year ago and has decided to go back to school in order to, you know, get into a different field. And they have been having a problem paying their bills and everything, and they've been working as well as they can to do it. She had gone to her lender to try and refinance the house at a lower interest rate to lower her monthly payment. And their credit rating is poor, but they are making the payments and they want to keep doing it. Do you know where they might be able to go to get some help? The Bank of America won't help them. They've got a house through FHA, and they've tried everything they can do to lower the mortgage payment. And, you know, so that they can get along a little better. About a month after they said they couldn't help them, they called them back and asked them if they wanted to do a short sale. And
right.
They want to stay in their house.
But is it realistic for them to stay in their house, Karen?
Well, she's making pretty good money, and, you know, they're really making the payments. They're just kind of slow on everything. And if they could get the interest rate, like, because they're paying almost 7% interest right now.
So it's
and
an FHA. Karen,
it would help.
It's an FHA loan, so I don't understand why they can't do an FHA streamline refinance where they literally just lower the interest rate on the loan. Have they asked for that specifically?
What would you call it? The streamline?
FHA streamline. It's an FHA streamline refinance, and they should be able to just get the payment lowered.
Okay. Well, whatever she's done, she's been on the phone with them and everything, and they don't seem to want to work with them. And she feels like it's because they've got the PMI and everything, and, you know, they're willing to do a short sale.
All right. Well, listen to this. So if you go to makinghomeaffordable.gov, there's a program called FHA Home Affordable Modification Program.
Okay.
And it's a program for FHA, VA, and USDA for struggling homeowners designed to lower the monthly mortgage payment. So if you have a loan that's insured or guaranteed by FHA, you may be available. So let me give you a phone number.
Okay.
Where she can call. And she has to do this work because they're not going to talk to you.
Right. I know she'll have to. And she's willing to do the work. She just hasn't. She's just hit so many brick walls. She's losing faith in what, you know.
All right, let me give you this number.
Okay.
I'm going to give you the FHA's National Servicing Center.
Okay.
877-622-8525.
8525.
And
okay,
then
great.
She can also call if she wants to talk to a HUD certified housing counselor. 888-995-HOPE. 8-HOPE. The word hope, HOPE.
Oh, HOTE. Okay.
HOP. Like Paul.
Oh,
hope.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Hope for homeowners.
Well.
Or I should call it the Homeowners Hope Hotline. It's
right.
H-O-P-E.
Okay.
So she needs to call both of those numbers, start with the FHA's National Servicing Center, and then she can call the Homeowners Hope Hotline. And you can go online to makinghomeaffordable.gov, click on Explore Program, click on Lower Payments, and it will bring up the FHA Home Affordable Modification Program, FHA HAMP. And I will tweet that out as well for everybody listening on my Twitter account, which you can follow me at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. 21 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned. I'll be back with more on News Talk WSB.
Three new ways to save money and how to unlock gridlock. Monday with Clark Howard, 1 to 3 on News Talk WSB.
Six minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show. Thanks for joining me today on News Talk WSB. 404-872-0750 if you are interested in investing in real estate. And as I've said so many times, it is the best time ever to do that, and you feel like you need a little guidance, I have written some ebooks. $2.99 will get you 130 pages, five ebooks in one, at Amazon.com. So just go to Amazon.com, click on my page, Glink, G-L-I-N-K, and click on the ebooks, and it's right there, $2.99 for 135 pages of great information, information you must have before even beginning the process of stepping out and investing in real estate. 27 minutes past the hour, Eric joins us on the line. Hi, Eric.
Hi, Elise.
Hi.
I have a question. Before I want to say, your show is very, very, it's good information. I appreciate
your
show. Okay. Well, I am getting to refinance, and my credit score is 759, and I had a 5.27 rate, and they brought it down to a 4.5. I wanted to know if that was a good rate.
What kind of equity do you have in the property?
I'm not sure, but the house it cost about $265.
Yeah.
And
when did you buy the house?
2 years ago.
So the problem is, do I think 4.75 is a good rate? Absolutely. Could it be lower? Maybe. If you don't have enough equity in the property, your credit score isn't quite high enough to get you the best rate. So the higher the credit score, the better the rate you have. You're not in the very, very top part, which would be over 765. And you don't have enough equity in the property probably to make a really big difference. So 4.75 is good. I would shop around with four other lenders just to be sure and then make your decision. 28 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glank. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more on News Talk WSB.
Monday in Atlanta's Morning News, WSB meteorologist Kirk Mellis will tell you how long we'll stay under the broiler. His five-day forecast first thing as we get into the holiday week with you here on News Talk WSB.
36 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Glink, sitting in for my good friend Mark Arum, who's off enjoying the heat. At least I hope he's enjoying it, and I hope you are as well, staying cool. It's very, very important you stay hydrated today. Even if you're indoors, the heat does find a way to work its magic, so be sure to have a big glass of water with you, sip from it regularly, and don't get overheated, whatever you do. 404-872-0750. Let's go back to the phones. Ruth joins us on the line from Canton. Hi, Ruth.
Hi, Elise. I have a question for you. I wanted to know what your thoughts are on paying your escrow payment in with your monthly payment. My husband and I are retired. I retired in 2009. And we refinanced at that time to 4.5% and reduced our monthly payments to $200 a month.
Mm-hmm.
But the escrow keeps going up, and they've gone back up now to almost $50 a month. But my sister says, I have never paid escrow. Pay that yearly like you do your car insurance, which we can manage to do.
All right, let's stop right here. The escrow that you're referring to is property taxes
mm-hmm.
and insurance premiums, right?
Mm-hmm.
Both
right.
of those things go up every year.
Right.
So it makes sense that if your property taxes and your insurance premiums go up, then your monthly escrow payment is going to go
right.
up too, right?
Right.
So whether you're
right.
paying it with the mortgage payment or you're paying it two or three times a year separately,
right.
the overall cost is going to be higher. It's not like if you pay it yourself, it goes away, right?
No, but my husband is one of these people that he would rather pay things as he goes. But if we drop it, I called Bank of America, and my payments will be about $150 a month less. And I would rather, we're both retired, I would rather have monthly lower payments and then pay that escrow once a year or twice a year as it comes due, like we do our car insurance.
Why is that better for you? Because you're not saving any money and you're not earning any money in the bank. And what it does is if you do have some sort of a, you know, catastrophe, and you use that money inadvertently, then where are you going to come up with the money to pay
well,
the payment?
Well, I know we have to set aside and allow for that monthly, that when it does come due, we have to pay it.
Right, but I don't understand where the benefit is to you.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you. Is it better? I mean, do you think that it's better to just pay your escrow payments in with your monthly payments? We can make them. It's just that I would rather have lower going out money monthly.
Why? Because it's the same money, Ruth. I'm concerned that you don't understand that it's the same money. The lower monthly payments is fine, but you still have to take the same amount extra and stick it in a bank account somewhere so that you have it. So you're really setting aside the same payment every month.
Right.
You're not making any money doing this. And they will charge you, if they even let you, because usually you have to make this decision when you actually refinance, and a lot of it is based on how much equity you have in the property. Typically, lenders won't even let you do this without 35, 40, 50% equity in the property.
Well, I called Bank of America, and when he said that, he said, oh, yeah, you won't qualify to do that. So our payments would go from, right now they've gone back up to $943, almost $50 a month since we've refinanced.
Unless Bank of America has made a mistake in how much they're withholding for you, and you'll have to do that calculation based on how much your property taxes are and your insurance payment is, unless they've made a mistake in calculation, there is no benefit for you to switch.
It's none.
No.
You might as well just go ahead and just pay it and
just
let it be done.
Just
with
pay it,
it
monthly and don't worry about it.
Well, that's what my husband says. But
well, he's right in this case. I don't always think the husbands are right, but I do think in this case that if there was a benefit to you, Ruth, I would tell you.
All right. Well, I was coming home from the hospital. He had a hip replacement, and I thought, I'm going home, and I'm going to get on the phone, and I'm going to call and see if it's lower, because I called Bank of America, and they said you do qualify, and your payments can come down to $7-something a month, where they've gone back up to, I'm paying $943. But I did call her, and she reduced it 20-something, because they say, I've also heard they take out too much. They always take out more than what they should on escrow.
Well, they don't always, but they're entitled to, by law, to cover any overage or when property taxes go up. So if she took out some, I think that's good if it's not needed, but you just want to keep paying this monthly, Ruth. You really don't want it to end up in a situation where you're doing it on your own and you forget to make the payment and then you're behind in your taxes. You just don't want to get into that situation. So paying it every month, you know that it's going to get paid. That's the safe move. There's no benefit for you to do it another way. 404-872-0750. Let's see if we've got Bob on the line from Macon. Hey, Bob.
Hey, Elise. I really appreciate your show and what you do, and I just wanted to call and comment on how important it is to shop and shop and shop.
Yeah, so tell me, what happened?
I had a 4.5% 30-year, and I just refinanced. I thought that was great years ago, and now I've refinanced with no closing costs, 30-year money again, so I broke one of your rules by 2 years.
All right.
I waived escrows, 3.75, and absolutely no closing costs, and I get the appraisal back at closing.
Great.
And,
that is a good deal.
And lowered the payment about $80 a month, and I ask about waiving escrows, and some of those brokers screamed at me talking about, how do you know that? You know, that it'll be more, you know, and it's all about doing your homework and being wise when you call these people, because they don't all have your best interest at heart.
No, they really don't.
Just wanted to comment on that. And, I beg your pardon?
I said they don't have their... And people who've called the show today thinking that they can trust lenders and that just what they're told and all they have to do is believe it, it makes me want to scream, Bob.
Yeah, and at 3.75, I may never pay the loan off. I may end up down the road renting the house, and I never thought without escrows I could have a payment under $800 a month on a $170,000 mortgage.
Yeah, it's really amazing. You know, Sam and I were talking about this again. And your dog agrees, too.
Yes, he agrees, too. And guess what? She knows how to spell hope, H-O-P-E.
Oh, thankfully. That's good. So if you ever need that, she's got the answer. Bob, thank you. Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate it. 43 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Allison joins us on the line. Hi, Allison.
Hi.
What's going on?
Well, I'm a realtor. I've been a realtor for over 20 years in the Atlanta metropolitan area, and I just thought I would call and tell you something kind of interesting that's been going on in the market in the past month or so. it's, you know, we've all built up the buyers, telling everybody it's a buyer's market, it's a buyer's market, and it certainly has been, and there have been plenty of homes to look at in a variety of price ranges all over the metropolitan area. But lately, in the past few weeks, I've really seen some changes. The inventory has gone way down. I'm pulling up to houses to show a home, and there's two other cars waiting to get in, somebody in there looking at it right then. We have had, I have a number of buyers that we've put in homes on, offers on a couple different homes and had multiple offers come in on them, even homes that have only been on the market a day or two. It's really been kind of crazy. I hope it's a sign of things to come, and yet it's a little bit sad because as a buyer, you think, you know, you're still in the mindset that, that there are still the deals to be had out there, and there certainly are still some really good deals, but it's a little bit more difficult to get them than it was a month to 6 weeks ago. It's very interesting.
It is interesting how quickly these kinds of things can change. I would say that it'll be interesting to see as we move into sort of the dead heat of the summer, although honestly today qualifies. But it'll be interesting to see as we move further along in the year, closer to the presidential election cycle, because you've been a realtor for a long time, so you know that in a, as you get closer and closer to a presidential election, things slow down in the real estate market. And it'll be interesting to see if, you know, mortgage interest rates at historic lows can compensate for the insecurity people feel about which way the presidential election is going to go and making a big decision like buying a home.
Well, you know, the other thing is I'm curious also of how school starting dates affect. I mean, you always get a little bit of a push here before school starts, and then it tends to slow down just a little bit. The other thing I've noticed, too, is that it's still a little slower in the jumbo once you get up into needing a jumbo loan.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to tell you another thing that I thought was just food for thought is that I'm curious how it's going to go down with the appraisers, because what's happening is, you know, appraisers are still, obviously, when they pull records, they're looking at foreclosures and they're looking at homes that have sold as distressed sales and lower home prices. But when you have three offers in on a property, that pushes the sales price up. There's nothing you can do about that. It's just going to push the sales price up. And I'm wondering how that's going to pan out when the appraiser gets a hold of it, because he doesn't really care that there were three offers in on it.
Well, what you're seeing already, or what I'm seeing, is that the pending home sale number is very different from the closing home sale number. So pending home sales are up, right? That's when people make the offers, the offer gets accepted. Once the appraisal comes in and it's not appraising out, if they need a loan, they're not getting that loan. So either the price has to be adjusted, which the sellers don't want to do, and especially if it's a short sale, the sellers really can't do it, or the deal falls apart and they move on to the next buyer. But that's kind of, I think that's why you're seeing closings fall apart at a rate of very high rate of about 16 to 17% in some areas.
Well, I found it interesting that I had a multiple offer situation here this week where one of the other purchasers presented as part of their counter that it was not contingent upon the appraisal. Now, obviously, they must have had a pocket full of cash to cover whatever that shortage was going to be. But, you know, I find that's a very interesting tactic for negotiating it. You know, it doesn't work if you're not sitting on a pile of cash, but, you know, if you can afford to do it, it certainly does make your offer more appealing.
It sure does. Well, Allison, I hope it goes well for you and your buyers and your sellers.
Thank you. I just want to tell your listeners out there that if they're on the fence of whether or not it's a good time, I think the time is here. And home prices, there might be a lot of buyers out there, but there's still some great deals. And now is a really, really great time to go ahead and go for it.
Sounds good. Thanks so much for your call. Happy 4th of July. We appreciate it. 47 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Carl joins us on the line from Marietta. Hi, Carl.
Hi there. I was just calling. This is the first time I've ever called anybody on radio, but I was on my way home, and I heard you talking to the lady about the escrow account. And I'm also retired, and I believe that the worst thing a person could have is a month-to-month escrow account. Years ago, they used to sell the mortgages, and you never knew who had the escrow and where the money was.
They still do that, Carl. They still sell all the mortgages off.
Okay. And then, like, for me, I get my insurance bill once a year, and I look at it. If it's not what I think it should be, I go out and shop and get another insurance company.
Okay, you can still do that, though, when you're in an escrow situation. My problem is when you, and this may not be a problem for you, but Ruth's issue is she somehow thought that by lowering her monthly payment, she was making it better for herself. And she's not. And one of the biggest problems that seniors have is that they forget that they have to make, they pay off their house, and they forget that they have to make the payments for real estate taxes and insurance premiums. Or they take it out of the escrow. And believe me, I've never had a tax or insurance escrow.
Okay.
But I understand, and my property taxes are like $20,000 a year. It's a huge chunk to have to make that payment. And when you're on a fixed income, there's no way that you're going to be able to remember and set it aside and do all of this and then take that money and pay it. Fine. What have you gained? Because it used to be that you got money on those payments in an account. You don't get that anymore. So she's going to now pay the bank to set the money aside to earn zero interest, and now she has to remember to make that payment, and she's probably not in a position to remember that. And so the easy solution is to keep doing it this way. And there's no benefit, which is what I said to her. It's like, I'm not trying to keep her from making more money. There's no money to be made here.
Right. I agree. If she's a senior that's forgetting, then her mortgage should be paid off. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're over 70 years old, in my opinion, if you're between 70 and 75 and you're not real close or your mortgage isn't paid off, then you have a problem that you need to get out of that. You know, you need to do something else.
You got a bigger issue, but to start messing around where she's going to, you know, when you do this in the middle, particularly of a loan, right? So now you're paying on your mortgage, and now you're going to make a change. The odds are everything's going to get screwed up. So the lender's going to get screwed up, and you're going to get screwed up, and the payment's not going to be made, and suddenly you're behind in your taxes, and you don't even know what that means. There's so many opportunities for it to get messed up.
I can see what you're saying with senior citizens. I'm a senior citizen, but I'm very diligent about making sure that what I'm paying for is the right price, and I just worry about tax bills. If there's a tax bill that goes up, then I'm at the courthouse. Complaining about it.
And you absolutely can, and I think she could fight it, and none of those rights to fight or change your insurance, none of that gets taken away when you're in an escrow situation, but at least you know if you make your mortgage payment on time that those bills are getting paid while you're fighting it. And it's much easier to fight on the other side to get money back than it is to start making up payments that you suddenly have missed. And that could quickly snowball into a much bigger problem. Thanks so much for your call, Carl. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more on News Talk WSB.
WSB, with the most traffic reports every afternoon and the most traffic every morning. In your car, depend on News Talk WSB every day.
57 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show, filling in for my good friend Mark Arum. We've been tweeting during the show. If you want to find the links that I've talked about, go to @Glink, @GLINK. You will find the links if you are interested in an FHA Home Affordable Modification Program, FHA HAMP. You will find the link for the HARP program, who qualifies, all the rest. There's great information. MakingHomeAffordable.gov is that website. Tweeted out the phone numbers as well. I think I did anyway. So you'll be able to see it. Appreciate that you were here with us. I will be in tomorrow morning, of course, at 11 to 1 for my usual Elise Glink show. Hope you can join me for that. And then I'm filling in for Clark on Wednesday, July 4th. He's going to run the Peachtree Road Race as usual, and I'm going to, at least I think he is, and I'm going to be here sitting in his shoes, chatting with you about real estate and the money that surrounds it. So lots of great stuff coming up this week for the 4th of July. Glad you'll be able to join us. In the meantime, stay cool. Drink water. Hang out by the air condition. Find a cooling center if you don't have one. And if you need to find one, you can go to WSBradio.com and we will find it for you. Hope you have a great rest of the weekend. I will talk to you tomorrow, 11 a.m., right here on News Talk WSB.